This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Congress has blocked or delayed several of the Obama administration's judicial nominees, but the president's nominee for Surgeon General, Boston-based Dr. Vivek Murthy, is facing what might be an even bigger obstacle: the lobbying power of the National Rifle Association. It's because of Dr. Murthy's previously stated views on gun control, and the issue has Boston's medical community reacting with alarm at how politics is colliding with public health policy. Joining us with more is Carrie Goldberg, co-host of WBUR's Common Health blog. Hi there, Carrie.
Hi, Meghna.
Let's step back and let me ask you why President Obama even felt that Dr. Murthy is a good nominee to begin with. He's but 36 years old.
He is, but he's done a great deal in those 36 years. So first of all, academically, his credentials could be called impeccable. I mean, he went to Harvard undergrad, he went to Yale for his MD and his MBA, and then he now practices at Brigham and Women's Hospital here in Boston, and he has started a nonprofit on HIV and AIDS education, and he's also started a software firm to help make clinical trials more efficient. So in terms of his basic accomplishments, he's pretty hard to question. He also has a political side, though.
Well, very much so, because he's founder of a group that was once called Doctors for Obama, right, back in 2008, changed its name to Doctors for America.
Exactly. And it's been a very strong proponent of Obamacare. So it's not as if he stayed completely out of the political fray.
Mm-hmm. And it's through his work with Doctors for America that this issue of his position on guns and gun control has come up.
Right. And apparently there was also an issue about a personal tweet that Dr. Murthy put out right after the Newtown shootings in Connecticut, in which he said that he was, quote, tired of politicians playing politics with guns, putting lives at risk because they're scared of the NRA. Guns are a healthcare issue.
Okay, so that tweet has now definitely come back and is one of the reasons why Dr. Murthy is getting so much attention about his views on gun control. I mean, let's listen to a little bit about what's happened to him on Capitol Hill. We have a little bit of tape from a hearing in which he was questioned by several senators. Here's Republican Senator Lamar Alexander from Tennessee, who's asking Dr. Murthy about whether or not he's going to use his position as Surgeon General to advance his views on gun control.
You said in your advocacy for passage of gun control last year, tired of politicians playing politics with guns, putting lives at risk because they're scared of the NRA, to what extent do you intend to use the Surgeon General's office as a bully pulpit for gun control?
Thank you, Senator Alexander. So to start, I do not intend to use the Surgeon General's office as a bully pulpit for gun control. That is not going to be my priority, as we spoke about. My priority and focus is going to be on obesity prevention.
So that second voice you heard was the voice of Dr. Vivek Murthy. But Carrie, it seems as if the nation's most powerful lobbying group on guns and firearms in America doesn't believe what Dr. Murthy is saying. I mean, the NRA delivered a rather strongly worded letter to the Senate overall. What did it say?
What it said in this letter was that it described Dr. Murthy as having a record of political activism in support of radical gun control measures, and said that it was concerned about this. And also it said that he had a lengthy history of hostility towards the right to keep and bear arms.
Okay. And I mean, basically what it comes down to is now with the power of the NRA, its money and lobbying in play here, many, many people, both in political and medical circles, are saying, we don't know yet, but this may have deep six Dr. Murthy's nomination.
It may. Certainly in this period when we're leading up to a midterm election where it looks like the Democratic majority in the Senate is in play, it has made the White House tell the New York Times that it is recalibrating its policy on putting forward Dr. Murthy. That might mean that the White House will wait till after the midterm elections, or it might mean worse. We'll have to see.
Okay, so let's take a step back and talk a little bit more about what this means for the medical community when it comes to discussing anything about guns. And joining us to do that is Dr. Robert Segi. He's a pediatrician at Boston Medical Center. He co-wrote the American Academy of Pediatrics policy statement on firearms injuries, and he joins us in the studio. Dr. Segi, welcome to you.
Thank you.
So you've weighed in on this issue, and I've read that you've said that it's completely inappropriate for gun control to be used as any sort of litmus test for the nominee of Surgeon General. Why is that?
Because I think the opinion about guns that Dr. Murthy has been known for is a mainstream opinion of the American medical community. The American Medical Association, the American Academy of Pediatrics, the American Public Health Association, numerous surgical associations have strong policies advocating regulations to restrict the access of children to guns, for one. And Dr. Murthy represents that mainstream, scientifically backed opinions. We also know that at the time that Dr. Murthy sent his tweet, a majority of the members of the National Rifle Association were in favor of things like expanded background checks, like limiting guns to one purchase per month, all of those things in surveys of NRA members. And now the NRA in the letter says that these are radical positions. They're not radical positions.
It seems as if there's a great deal of debate here between various sides about what is mainstream opinion, because the NRA, you know, points to Dr. Murthy's previous positions on an assault weapons ban or a proposal to reduce the availability of those high-capacity magazines that hold, you know, dozens and dozens of bullets. The NRA says that to the 100 million gun-owning Americans, that any limitation on their right to own those weapons is out of the mainstream.
Well, I think that they're actually wrong. And surveys of NRA members do not show a support for assault weapons. They don't show a support for high-capacity magazines. And moreover, Dr. Murthy's position, or the position of Surgeon General of the United States, is not based on opinion polls. It's based on what the medical opinion is and what the scientific evidence shows and what mainstream medical groups advocate.
You know what I think is very interesting, one of the number of interesting things about this issue right now, is that for a lot of Americans, it has basically opened their eyes to how the medical community looks at the effects of guns on the health of Americans. And the reason why I say that is that we've got a little bit of tape from an NRA lobbyist, Chris Cox, and here he is on Fox News.
Mr. Murthy's not just a gun control supporter, he's a gun control activist, and it's clear that his agenda is to treat a constitutional freedom like a disease.
Okay, so Chris Cox there of the NRA says constitutional freedom like a disease. That's the NRA's view. But I've seen a lot of public health advocates, for example, say that gun violence needs to be treated through a public health lens, for example.
Absolutely. And I think that the President Obama has said the same thing in the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta. It is the mainstream opinion that you can approach it. And I just want to tell you why doctors care about this. Care about it because we treat these people. We treat people who've been injured. We recently wrote a paper, every day in the United States, 7 children are hospitalized for gunshot injuries. We treat them. We know the effects of trauma. And because of that, we view this as a public health problem.
Mm. A lot of people are concerned about the politicization of the Office of Surgeon General. But it seems to me that for some time, this has been happening. In 2007, 3 former surgeons general, Richard Carmona, C. Everett Koop, and David Satcher, basically came together for a congressional hearing testifying that during their tenures as Surgeon General, they were, in certain cases, required to mention the president's name 3 times on every page of a speech, that some of their efforts, specifically C. Everett Koop, regarding the AIDS crisis were thwarted by the Reagan White House, and that the Clinton administration blocked Satcher from releasing reports on needle exchanges and sexual health education. So is this just more of the same that we've been seeing in terms of how politics plays in terms of the person who's supposed to be the nation's doctor?
I'm not sure if there's ever been a time where before a Surgeon General was confirmed, his opinions on medical and public health issues were called into question. That's a very different thing than once you're Surgeon General, having to mention the president's name or those sort of things. It's a political office. There's no getting around it. But not being allowed to be Surgeon General because you have in the past advocated the same positions that most American doctors and surgeons already advocate. I believe that's unprecedented and very dangerous for the United States.
Mm. And what we're seeing from a lot of the medical community is this response of like, are you kidding me? Like, basically, this is a doctor who's expressing a very mainstream view. So you're seeing a lot of reaction from even, for example, the fairly conservative New England Journal of Medicine stepping up and saying, we support Dr. Murthy to be Surgeon General, and this is outrageous and unheard of for these views to be blocking his nomination.
Okay, I'm glad you said that, because when I take a step back and try to look at the totality of what's been happening so far with Dr. Murthy's nomination, you know what comes to mind? Robert Bork in 1987, because right now a lot of people who are defenders of Dr. Murthy are saying that special interest groups have hijacked his nomination. But exactly the same thing happened when President Reagan nominated Robert Bork to the Supreme Court. But in that case, it was liberals who launched an all-out campaign to defeat Bork as a nominee. And of course, as we've seen, the lasting effect there on Supreme Court nominees has been a long and chilling one. Essentially, they don't say anything during their nomination process when the Senate Judiciary Committee talks to them. I mean, these are people who are supposed to be offering opinions as the nation's top judges. Dr. Seggy, do you think that we could see a similar impact on future nominees for the office of Surgeon General?
Well, absolutely, and that's what worries me. Because it turns out that our country faces a number of public health issues. Take Dr. Murthy's comment on obesity. There are people in the food industry or soda manufacturers who may have opinions about whether sugar-sweetened beverages belong in children's schools. There may be a congressperson from North Carolina who's concerned about the tobacco industry. There are many special interests who have interests that intersect with the proper role of a Surgeon General in public health. That's not the job of the nominations process and not the job of the Senate. And it's certainly true that there are many other factors that go into that, but to stifle the voice of public health and of medicine so that that debate can't even be entered is a disgrace for the country.
Well, Dr. Robert Seggy is a pediatrician at Boston Medical Center. He also co-wrote the American Academy of Pediatrics policy statement on firearms injuries. Dr. Seggy, thanks so much for joining us today.
And thank you so much for inviting me.
And Carrie Goldberg, co-host of WBUR's Common Health blog. Great to have you as always, Carrie.
Thanks, Meghna.
And Common Health has been reporting quite a bit on the nomination of Dr. Vivek Murthy. You can see all of it at commonhealth.wbur.org. And finally today, as regular riders of the MBTA Blue and Green Lines probably already know, much to their excitement or consternation, the Government Center T station is closed. Closed, 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 closed. For a major $90 million two-year-long renovation. Trains will still pass through the station, but riders won't be able to get on or off there as the total overhaul is underway. So if you're headed to Logan Airport, take the Silver Line. Government Center Station is 110 years old, one of the oldest in the MBTA network. It's been more than 50 years since its last major renovation. And just before the station closed on Saturday, I got a tour with MBTA project manager Dan Beaulieu as he showed me how the T plans to bring the old Government Center stop into the 21st century. So first of all, thank you so much for meeting us here. And so tell us a little bit about the scope of the project.
The Government Center Station project is primarily an accessibility improvement project. As part of that, we have to do a full reconstruction of the entire station, all of the platforms on the Green Line level and the Blue Line level. And when you rebuild the platforms, you have to rebuild all the staircases, the escalators, the stairs. So there is a substantial new head house that's going to be built as part of the project.
And head house meaning?
I'm sorry, a new station entrance.
Okay.
Glass structure and composite concrete and granite structure.
Well, and we're standing what exists today, right in the middle of the Government Center Plaza. And everyone who's been here will know it's that sort of, I've always thought it was like as a brick shack that doesn't really tell you what's below.
We call it the brick bunker.
You call it the brick bunker, okay.
And the brick bunker will be gone once we close the station, approximately 3 or 4 weeks after we start the disassembly of the brick bunker to prepare the station for deconstruction or demolition, if you will.
Well, great. So can we go inside and just take a look at a little bit more of the changes that are going to be made?
Sure.
So we're down here on the Green Line platform in Government Center, and what are the changes that are going to be made here? What's going to look like 2 years from now?
The Green Line platform will be completely rebuilt. It will be raised between 8 and 12 inches in order to accommodate boarding and debarking from the low-floor Green Line trains. Mm-hmm. As well, we will be putting in the elevators from the new entrance down to the Green Line.
Uh-huh.
and we're putting in a second set of elevators from the green line to the blue line.
Right.
So we had to wait for that outbound green line train to go through. That screech on the green line there on that corner is really, really loud. Will the construction do anything to mitigate how loud the trains are here?
The construction of the station incorporates some sound-absorbing elements in the ceiling systems, as well as there is a parallel effort going on within the MBTA to try to mitigate some of the noise that is going on through the curvature of the entrance of westbound and the exit of westbound in the station. And that's an ongoing process that we're hoping that will coincide with the reopening of the station.
Okay, great. And there it is again. I'm a frequent Green Line rider, so I'm very familiar with that sound. Shall we go downstairs to the Blue Line platform?
That'd be fine.
Government Center is one of the oldest stations in the system, right?
Yes, it is.
I guess a lot of people are wondering why the station has to be closed down completely.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, we have a 100-year-old station here. We're going to find things that aren't fully vetted in the design process. And when we have the whole station, it gives us a great deal more flexibility to be able to respond and address those issues.
So you mentioned that the station's 100 years old, and in fact, one of my favorite things about Government Center is actually at the end of the blue line platform, the old tiles that still say Scully Square?
Yes.
Are those going to be preserved?
They will be restored. Okay. If we go right around the corner here from the main stairway going down from the green to the blue line.
Here's one that says the Scully Under.
We have one right here that says Scully Under. Yeah. This will be taken off by a certified restoration company, and it will be taken off tile by tile, and it will be identified, put on a mortar board, and then when we're rebuilding, it will be reinstalled clean, looking a little better than it does today, but keeping its historical integrity.
How many of these this sort of scale projects have you been at the head of?
Too many.
And what about this project in particular excites you the most?
It's very challenging. I like to say it. Working on this station is like doing open-heart surgery on a patient playing tennis. We've got many, many, many moving pieces, and we have to keep the running rail active while we're reconstructing the station. It's very old. It's multi-layered because we have the green line upstairs, the blue line that we're standing on now. There are a lot of structural complexities between the two, as well as the surface condition. There's a lot of structural challenges, as well as it's a very exciting job because it's going to be a beautiful station when we're done.
Well, thank you so much for giving us this tour.
Thank you for having us.
Dan Beaulieu is project manager for the Government Center MBTA renovation. The station will be closed for 2 years, so for more information on how to get around during the station closure, go to radioboston.org. We got a rock to rock to rock and roll stop tonight.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston. Won't stop until we see you, Secretary, smile. We gotta see some office boys.